From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Leslie Stahl is a trailblazer, a broadcast pioneer who has traveled the globe. She set the standard for women in journalism, from the White House to 60 Minutes. She's turning her reporter's eye to what she says is her best assignment yet, becoming a grandma. It's a joy for her and a complicated role for many. 1 in 10 American children live with a grandparent. This hour on Point, the joy and the struggle of grandparenting today with Grandma Leslie Stahl. You can join us on air or online. Are you a grandmother? What's your role? Are you a different grandmother than you were mother? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York City is Leslie Stahl. You know her from 60 Minutes and her distinguished career with CBS News. You can add grandmother to her resume. Her new book is Becoming Grandma, The Joys and Science of the New Grandparenting. You can find an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Leslie Stahl, so great to have you. Welcome to On Point.
It's great to be here and to be with you again, Jane,
Our
CBS days together.
That's right. Leslie was a true mentor to me at CBS, so I'm glad you're with us today, Leslie. Why a book about becoming a grandma?
Well, excuse me. I'm a little hoarse. I've been talking too much. Somebody asked me, a publisher, to write a book about 60 Minutes, and it took me 1 second to know that that was not a good idea. You know, if you really got into it, I probably wouldn't be on the air next year, right? So we just had lunch, and I talked so much about my granddaughter. I only had one at that point. I have two now. That he said to me, you know, that could be a book, being a grandmother. And all the, well, as you said yourself, all the complications, all the joys. And I thought, could I work on something like that for 3-4 years? And I thought I could, and so I agreed. And it has held my attention. I've loved writing the book, and I go into all different kinds of aspects of being a grandparent. And I also write, obviously, about the young parents as well as the grandparents.
Tell me about the moment you met your first grandchild.
Oh, my goodness, Jane. It was explosively elating, and to such a depth that it really hit me. It was unexpected. Everyone says being a grandmother is the best thing that could ever happen to a woman, and the same for a grandfather and a man. But there's no way to describe this, I mean, full-bodied blaze of love. And it is a completely different kind of love than you've ever felt before. And I was a little confused by it because, really, I no one had told me that it was going to throw me off my mark so much.
You wrote,
so that was part of wanting to write the book. What was that, you know? And am I alone, or do all grandmothers go through that? And I found out, yeah, we all go through that.
Well, you wrote, I felt like I was floating, that I was on a high. I know it sounds hyperbolic, but I feel like a lover. I keep wanting to burst into song. There's actually science behind these emotions, right? What did you find?
Well, one of the things I found, which blew my mind, is that the circuitry in us, the pathway of our neurons and the way our hormones flow through our body for romantic love is exactly the same circuitry and pathway for baby love. So when we do love those children, it is actually, truly, biologically falling in love. And a lot of us do use the same language. We say we're head over heels about these children, these babies. And it does feel like that to an extent. It's more unconditional than romantic love, completely more unconditional. And it never, ever, ever fades.
There was an interesting juxtaposition in your book. You were losing your mother at the same time your first granddaughter was born. Tell us about that. It made the experience somewhat bittersweet.
It took the edge off both. You know, my mother dying but new fresh life, and new fresh life but my mother was dying. And I had the impression that she was hanging on just to meet her great-grandchild. She wanted a great-grandchild so badly. She called my daughter on the phone. My mother was in her early 90s by this point. And she called my daughter on the phone, and she said, "Are you pregnant?" And my daughter had to admit that she wasn't. And my mother slammed the phone down on her. That's how she really wanted this child. And she did hang on. She hung on to touch and see and hold her great-grandchild. And just a few days later, she died.
How is your mothering different from your grandmothering?
Oh, Jane, night and day. And all grandmothers say this, and all grandfathers say this. No matter how strict we were as parents, no matter how deeply we felt the responsibility and maybe had fears about our children, we were on them. We were critical. We were trying to get them ready for the world. As a grandparent, all you do is love them. It's unconditional. And we turn into total mushballs. We cannot say no. We give them whatever they want. And it's uncontrollable. You don't say, "Oh, I'm going to be a permissive grandparent." It happens to us. It's automatic. And we're all the same. And when grandmothers and grandfathers get together, we laugh at ourselves. We don't get ourselves. But this is quite universal, and it's part of this complete, unfettered, total body loving.
You write that becoming a grandmother was an opportunity to atone for the choices you made as a mother. When your daughter Taylor was young and you were the White House correspondent, you know, things were busy, as you say. I mean, this is a bit of a reboot. Is that what you're saying?
Reboot's a good word for it. I think that my generation, we were the first wave into the workplace after affirmative action and the women's rights movement. And we were inventing how to balance big careers and having children. We were experimenting. They called us pioneers in the workforce, but we were also pioneering how to have it all or do it both. I think that my daughter's generation, the new parents, are getting the balance a little better. They're tilting back a little more to their families. They're insisting that they have time for their kids. They're asking for time off to go to the soccer match. I would never have done that. My generation was really trying to fight our way into the workforce, particularly the white-collar workforce, to prove we could do the job as well as a man and like a man. And we put so much energy into that that we missed a lot. We missed a lot. And I do think working mothers are more, even more attentive and thrown over the cliff by their grandchildren, because we missed certain phases. You know, we weren't 100% there, and it is a form of atoning. But you know, there's an automatic part to this. I'm not thinking, and none of us are thinking, "Oh, I'm going to make up for it." We're in 100%, and it throws us off the arc of our lives even. You know, you just have a sense of where you're headed, and all of a sudden you've got a new path, and it's a happy path. It makes you healthier. It really does. There have even been studies of that. Taking care of grandchildren makes you healthier, both men and women. But I do think there is that element of, I'm not going to miss this.
My mother said that becoming a grandmother is the one time in your life you get to name yourself. So, Leslie Stahl, what's your name as a grandma?
Oh, that's funny. I wish I'd interviewed her for the book. I wish I had that line in the book. I'm Lolly, and I chose Lolly myself because my mother, her real name was Dolly, and she wanted everybody to call her Dolly. I thought if my grandchildren try to call me Leslie, they couldn't say that. How would it come out? And I thought, well, it'll come out Lolly. And my husband, Aaron, said, well, if you're going to be Lolly, I'm going to be Pop. So we're, it's a little tacky, but we are Lollipop.
Have you become, you know, you talk in the book about Michelle Obama's mother living in the White House, turning from great disciplinarian to the great indulger as, yes, as a grandmother. Has that happened to you?
Oh, total, total. I think that it is this wiring, this new wiring we get. And there's a, I write a lot about this biochemistry of this change that comes over. Obviously, mothers have a huge change. Well, grandmothers do too. And where am I going here?
The great indulger, the grandmother,
oh, the great
the disciplinarian
indulger. And
indulger.
I think, yeah, this rewiring.
Yeah.
For example, I think it disables our ability to say no. I really do. I think that it kind of just shuts that whole line of vocabulary. You can't, do it better, try it again, straighten up. All of that we can't say because we think they're perfect. And it is. It's like, you know, being blinded by love. And everything they do is adorable, brilliant. A kid can put his shoes on the right feet and a grandmother swoons. You know, did you see that?
You quote someone in your book, keep your mouth shut and your wallet open, right?
Yeah, right. Well, keep your mouth shut is a whole different part of this because grandmothers today come to realize that their daughters-in-law, sons-in-law hold a card that they never had, which is they hold the card of those babies.
We're talking,
and they want those babies.
Yes, they do. We'll talk more about that after the break. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. Much more after this break, including your calls. This is On Point. We'll be right back. This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with Leslie Stahl this hour on her new book, Becoming Grandma. And you can join the conversation. Are you part of a family where the grandparents have taken on more responsibility financially, even raising the children? How is it working? Leslie Stahl is my guest this hour, a 60 Minutes correspondent, author of Becoming Grandma, The Joys and Science of the New Grandparenting. Leslie, let's talk about non-traditional families. More often these days, a grandparent is actually the primary caregiver of children. What have you learned about this large and really growing population?
Right. There are grandparents all across the country and all different economic strata who one day, for never a good reason, find that they have gained custody of their own grandchildren. And some of these grandparents really struggle. They had a game plan for their retirement, and it did not include raising a child again. My sister-in-law, who's a psychologist and has some of these custodial grandparents as her clients or patients, says that they are the unsung heroes of our society because they're kind of hidden. We don't know about what they're going through, how difficult it is, particularly if the kids were taken away from an abusive home or a neglecting parent, because then they're dealing with a kid who probably feels they've been rejected and is a little older.
You write in the book
going through puberty.
Right,
you know,
right.
Difficult.
You write that 60% of grandparents are stepping in today to help raise their grandkids by either babysitting or doing homework, running errands, giving money of some sort. But then you have the 1 in 10 American kids who actually live with a grandparent. And you write a third of them count their grandparents as their primary caretaker.
Right. Right. I came upon a building, a unique building that the city of New York put up just for, well, they put it up for grandparents raising children, but they're inevitably grandmothers, single grandmothers, widowed grandmothers. And I went up there. It's just a fabulous place. And the city does provide all kinds of services to help them deal with surly teenagers. They give tutoring for the kids. There's just backup there. This needs to be replicated around the country. It isn't, but it should be.
You also write about a great program called Hope Meadows.
Oh, my.
Tell us a little bit about that.
This was extraordinary.
Yeah.
That was eye-opening. This is a community in Illinois. It was started by a woman named Brenda Ehart, who was doing her thesis on what's wrong with the foster care system. And she decided to bring a whole bunch of families who would be willing to adopt some of these foster kids together so that they could back each other up and not, you know, reject the children, which is what happens in the foster care system too often. And then she had a whole lot of extra houses, and she just populated them with senior citizens, offering them low rent. And organically and on its own, these senior citizens became the grandparents. Mm. And they blossomed. The grandparents blossomed. Mm. Some of the men particularly had health issues that disappeared. Depression lifted. I had a woman I interviewed who'd been there for this has been there for about 20 years. She's been there the whole time. She said, this has been the best period of my life, the best phase of my life.
Let me bring in Brenda Krause Ehart. She's president of Generations of Hope, creator of Hope Meadows, which, as Leslie Stahl says, is this intergenerational community supporting families with adopted children featured in Leslie's book. Brenda, how nice to have you with us. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. Thank you very much.
So why does Hope Meadows work?
Hope Meadows works because, well, it's complicated. You can't just bring in people from different backgrounds and expect them to have the relationship that Leslie has with her grandchildren or I have with my granddaughters. So there's many things that we have to do, but one of the things that makes it work is that the older adults who did become grandparents very readily to these children came to Hope Meadows for the specific purpose of helping these children and the families who were adopting them. So that it's that purpose that brought these people together, and it's that purpose that trumped everything else that might cause problems.
And the kids who come to Hope Meadows have really had a rough road, right? Many of them come from poverty.
Yes. All the children, when I started Hope Meadows, all of the children who came there were, at the time they came there, in the foster care system, almost always because of the crack cocaine epidemic that was rampant 20 years ago.
Hmm. And what's go ahead, Leslie.
I was going to say, one of the things Brenda just said is that these adults are the grandparents of the kids, but they're helping the parents. And that is a huge part of this, Brenda, right?
Correct. It is. Leslie's often talked about how, being a grandparent, having your own children, having the grandchildren, everybody wins. Well, at Hope Meadows and in other programs that are adapting this model around the country for other populations of people who are vulnerable, I lost my train of thought.
These are vulnerable populations, and grandparents are stepping in to really help.
Right, but everybody is winning here, and the grandparents are helping the parents. The parents are there for the grandparents when they need help. They need a ride to a doctor. And definitely the children are really enriching the lives of these, quote, surrogate grandparents. But really, they are just grandparents. And the grandparents' lives, of course, the grandparents are doing tremendous things. Being in the lives of these children, not just mentoring them, helping them, tutoring them, and so forth, but being there to just listen
and love them and unconditionally love them.
Absolutely.
Same as any other grandparent. But when I was there, I heard a story told to me by one of the younger parents that she was just at her wit's end. She had adopted 4 siblings, and they were just out of control. And she didn't know what was going to happen. She couldn't handle it and got so frustrated that she called one of the seniors and said, can you please come over here and just stay with my kids? I need to get out of this place. Mm-hmm. And the senior came over and stayed with the kids. And this young mother, and she was a single mother, you know, went, got in her car and drove around for 45 minutes, you know, so regenerated, came back. And this is exactly what this community does. These seniors spell the parents, and they love the children. I was so impressed when I was there.
Brenda Kraus Ehart, thanks so much. Good luck with Hope Meadows.
Thank you.
Thank you. So many callers here want to get in with Leslie Stahl. Kay in Oklahoma City is first. Kay, welcome to the program. Hello.
Hi, Jane.
Hi. Go ahead.
I was just wanting to share that when you have your own children, it's, of course, very special. But you cannot explain grandparenthood. You just have to experience it. It is just such a joy, and I'm fortunate to be in the same city with my granddaughters who are now 17 and 20. But they just bring such a different delight to you than your own children did.
True, Kay. Thank you so much for the call. Leslie Stahl, three-quarters of grandparents say that being a grandparent is the single most important and satisfying thing in their life, more important than traveling or having financial security, all of it.
Absolutely. And what Kay said is so true. Although I did try to explain it, Kay, in my book, that's what it's about, trying to explain what we grandparents are feeling and going through. And you had mentioned before, Jane, that one of my friends said to me, being a grandparent is keeping your mouth shut, keeping everything shut, including your mouth, except your wallet. And we are, as grandparents, spending so much money on these kids. Listen to this statistic. Grandparents today are spending 7 times more on their grandchildren than grandparents did just 10 years ago. We are really in there. And I, for one, I'm happy about it. It's great. I love it.
Here's Jim in Savannah, Georgia. Hi, Jim. Welcome to On Point with Leslie Stahl.
Oh, hello. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment that my daughter, after a divorce, moved into the house with my wife and I and with our grandson. And they lived with us for almost 2 years. And I was just really struck by how much I had changed by my, like, my working habits and all that, because I work on the at the port here in Savannah. I work, lead workships around the clock. I changed so I'd be home at night. And he got into a routine with me at night. After dinner, we'd go upstairs and get on a computer, and I'd put on some artists on YouTube. And he really loved Ryan Bingham. He would just dance and dance and dance. And then I realized, because when I grew up, I had 6 brothers. But, you know, the kids today, they don't have those families structured like they did. And you end up really becoming their best friend.
Oh, wow.
Jim, thanks so much. What a great call. You know, Jim's experience, Leslie, reminds me of what you write about your own husband, Eric.
Yep.
Aaron, who was changed by becoming a grandfather. But you guys, you write, were changed in different ways. You write that I was a jitterbug, he was a waltz. I was electrified, he was softened. Doing the same things, having different experiences, but still right there.
Yeah. I write a lot about grandfathers because they are changed. Just what Jim said. They are changed, softened. They fall as much in love with these kids. And their own children look at Pop, or whatever they call them, Dad, and say, what happened to Dad? He never did that with me. He never went up and just listened to music with me. Dads are as changed. And there are also studies that show men who retire, who get depressed, which is fairly common, that if they spend time with their grandchildren, the depression lifts. My husband has Parkinson's.
Yes, yes.
And when our first granddaughter was born, his symptoms went away. They've come back now, but for that first year, can you believe it? Parkinson's symptoms went away.
Sherry,
that's how powerful this is.
It is. Sorry. Sherry is in Omaha, Nebraska. Hi, Sherry. Welcome to On Point with Leslie Stahl.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes. Go ahead.
I was just completely moved by just listening to everything Leslie was saying about becoming a grandma. I am a young grandma. I'm just turning 50, and I'm lucky enough to be living really near my 4-year-old and 1-year-old grandsons. And they just they just light up my whole life. I just, everything she said is so true.
Sherry, thank you. Here's Linda in Wallingford, Connecticut. Hi, Linda. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. Hi, both of you. That is interesting. I'm a little bit the opposite of the previous caller. I am becoming 72 next week, and I have three grandchildren. The toddler has just turned three, and the twins have just turned 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband and I were, you know, we're a bit older and starting to think that perhaps we were never going to have grandkids. And now we have three. So it is quite amazing. It's really fun. We are in Connecticut. Our grandchildren are in Illinois. And I travel out there every couple of months. And my husband comes with me some of the time. We Skype very often. I just always think, thank goodness for Skype, because they get to see us, and we just are, you know, sitting there on the computer while they're having their dinner or whatever, and so they see us and remember us.
Thank goodness for technology, right, Linda? You write about this in the book. Thanks so much for the call, Leslie, about technology, and your grandkids are on the left coast, right?
Yeah, I relate to everything Linda said, but I wanted to pick up on one thing about old grandparents versus younger grandparents. When you're really young, and that is, you know, before your middle 50s, and you look in the mirror and you say, I'm a grandmother or I'm a grandfather? No way. And there's a whole thing that goes on, an adjustment, until the baby's born. And then it doesn't matter what age you are, whatever age you are, you just do this fall off the cliff, madly in love thing that goes on. But if you're older, and I was older, Linda, I was like you, you just can't wait. You're thinking, are these kids ever going to give me a grandchild? And you are so relieved when it comes. You are just so happy when it comes. You say, okay, those grandchildren can call me anything they want. They can do anything they want. So there is a difference before the baby's born between the older and the younger groups, I think.
You're right, Leslie Stahl, that baby boomer grandmas are unlike grands of any previous generation. Tell us who the role models are for grandmas in the 21st century.
Anybody over 60. And a lot of these women who are my generation worked, as I was saying before. So we were pioneers, and now we're pioneers in really coming up with a new way of grandparenting. So it's those same women who probably have, if not just a college degree, maybe an MBA or a PhD, or they're doctors, and they're still working, a lot of us. I'm still working.
Yeah.
So we are back to that balance of life business, right back where we started.
Yeah.
And we're younger. We feel younger. We're younger grandparents. We're more involved in a way. So we're working on, not only did we reinvent the workplace, we're now working on reinventing grandparenting.
Let me get Steve in here from Akron, Ohio. Hi, Steve. Welcome to On Point.
Yeah. Hi, Jane. Hi, everybody. This is a great discussion. I had a friend who said to me if he knew how great it was to have grandchildren, he would have had them first. And I totally agree with them. It's pure joy with my two grandsons. I love being with them, and I'm so fortunate that we're close by. Just wonderful.
Steve, thank you so much. Leslie Stahl, what kind of role model do you hope to be for your granddaughters?
Well, I want them. This comes off of what the last gentleman just said. I want them to know how much I love their parents. I don't feel this business of, oh, I should have had them first, because I am still in love with my own kid, and she is doing such a great job. And that's, I want to convey that to my grandchildren, that, you know, we don't share an enemy. There's another joke along those lines, you know, that grandparents and grandchildren share a common enemy. I don't feel that way, and I want my grandchildren to know that they have the best parents in the world.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with Leslie Stahl about her new book, Becoming Grandma. And you can join the conversation. Grandparents, how has being a grandparent changed you? How involved are you in your grandchildren's lives? We're speaking this hour with Leslie Stahl, 60 Minutes correspondent, author of Becoming Grandma, The Joys and Science of the New Grandparenting. Here's Brad in Detroit, Michigan. Hi, Brad. Welcome to the program.
Hi, ladies. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, go ahead.
You know, I really just wanted to touch how important the grandmother plays, especially when you're talking about these high-risk teens that are in foster care. All my brothers, I have six of them, were all adopted as high-risk teens into my household. And my grandma really stepped in and made it her job to instill these values and, you know, manners and other things that were important to us and my family into these children that came in at, you know, quite an older age.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my brother's gone on to the Navy, become engineers, and do really great things. And, you know, I really have my grandma to thank. Mm-hmm. You know, We all cook. We come from a Sicilian family, and that was very important for my grandma.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you,
Grandma. Right. So many things to be grateful to her for. Brad's story brings up an interesting point in my mind, Leslie Stahl. I mean, there are grandparents who do a lot, but there are grandparents who are not involved in their grandchildren's lives for a variety of reasons. What were the stories you heard about that?
Oh, this broke my heart, this part of what I discovered. There are any number, quite a few grandparents who are not allowed to see their own grandchildren. Who knows why? You know, the grandparents often have no idea what horrible thing they did to be punished like that. And believe me, it's a punishment. It's a horrible thing because children, as Brad just said and several of the other people who've called in have said, kids need their grandparents. Kids need to have that special unconditional love that we bestow on them. They need it. It's part of becoming a wholesome person. And to deprive your children of that because your mother said something to you when you were 13 or whatever. Now, if your parents were truly abusive, okay, I get that. But I mean, sometimes it's a small infraction, and you're hurting your own kids is the way I see it.
Here's a listener from Facebook, Anja, who says, I did not have a close relationship with either of my grandmothers. One lived in Germany and one struggled with mental illness. My children are blessed with two sets of grandparents that are a part of their lives and love them unconditionally. The grandparents are a safe place, a place to get a hug or a cookie or both, a place where there is no judgment and criticism. Mm. Every child should have this.
Wow, I love that. I love that. You said two sets of grandparents. Do you know how many kids have four sets?
Right. Step-grandparenting, right? Step-grandparenting,
exactly.
Yeah.
Four sets. I mean, I found a teacher who said on Grandparents' Day, they all come in with eight grandparents, and there's not enough room in the classroom.
How great that everybody gets along for the kids, right?
Yes,
let's go back
for the
to
kids.
Austin in Williamsburg, Virginia. Hi, Austin. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm calling to talk about my grandmother. She was an educator for 40-plus years, and I'm severely dyslexic. And through her love, commitment, and patience, she instilled a love of reading in me. And to this day, she's a role model for my mom and how she's being a grandmother. At my grandmother's funeral, lighthearted debates broke out about who was grandma's favorite because we all thought we were.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, that's how my mom is targeting her grandparenting. She wants all the kids to feel like they were special and loved, especially compared to everybody else and just for, you know, who they are. And I think there are some amazing grandparents out there, and I love the discussion you guys are having.
Austin, thank you. Thank you very much. Let's go to Brian in Charleston, Rhode Island. Brian, welcome to On Point. Hello.
Hi, ladies. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because, Leslie brings up a great valid point in the fact that grandchildren give grandparents a sense of something to do in life. For example, my grandmother of 92 years of age, She's still caring for my 13-year-old cousin in Puerto Rico, and in a place that is such has so much poverty stricken right now at this point in time, she somehow finds it every day to go about her things in her ways. And I mean, I couldn't tell you how much of a healthy woman at the age of 92 that she is, and it's truly amazing that that gives her it drives her every day.
Brian, thank you. Thanks so much.
Saw a lot of that.
Leslie, you talk in the book about in-laws, and a really interesting story, I thought. You talked about the most difficult interview you conducted for the book was the interview with your son-in-law's mother, Barbara,
whom
you love, but you asked her if it was hard being a grandmother on the paternal side, right?
This was the most difficult interview I did by far. First off, I discovered that there is a built-in competition between the two sets of grandparents. You don't want it to be there, but you're wondering, oh, do they like her more? Do they like him more? Do they spend more time with the kids? Do the kids know them better? It just swirls around in your mind, even if you don't want it to be there. So I called her up, and as you said, I said, do you think it's harder for the paternal grandmother? And she said, yes. And then I said, do you resent me? Now, this was a hard question to ask. And there was this long pause. And she said, yes. Whoa. Can you imagine? And then she told me why. And I wish people would read the book, because I think she was so eloquent. And I think that people will relate to this conversation that she and I had.
Between the daughter and her, whether her mother comes or his mother comes, and it's such an interesting dynamic,
Right. And somebody told me very wisely, this is a woman, a friend of mine, who has a son and a daughter. And she said, I can go into my daughter's kitchen and open a drawer and, you know, make a cup of coffee, maybe even cook something. I know where everything is because she set her kitchen up the way my kitchen was. I wouldn't dream of opening a drawer in my daughter-in-law's kitchen. Mm-hmm. And she said that, and she said she loves her daughter-in-law. Mm-hmm. But there is still, there's something always there, always there.
There's a very famous grandmother running for president right now, Hillary Clinton. Here's some sound from April 5th. Presidential candidate and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton answering questions on ABC's The View about being a grandmother while on the campaign trail.
I understand that, like, you basically arrange your entire campaign schedule around babysitting for baby Charlotte now.
For seeing Charlotte.
Yeah.
That's exactly right, Paula. I mean, I get sort of separation anxiety if I don't get to see her.
As a grandmother and a veteran political journalist, Leslie Stahl, do you think Clinton's talk about being a grandmother helps her connect in some way?
Well, it should. I went to a focus group to ask them questions about Hillary being a grandmother for the book. And this was a Republican focus group. And they thought that that image of her as a grandmother would soften some of these negatives that people feel about her. She has very high negatives. And they thought, these are Republicans, it would help her. And I'm surprised because of that. I'm sure she has her own focus groups. I'm surprised she doesn't talk even more about being a grandmother.
I was just going to say, I can't have you here on the day after the Indiana primary and not ask you briefly about this election season. What do you make of the presumptive Republican nominee, Donald Trump, possibly now going up against Hillary Clinton?
Well, one of the amusing things to me is the age issue, which doesn't come up. I actually was 100% sure, I would have put money on it, that whoever the Republican was going to go after Hillary Clinton for being too old. No. And you know why? Because Trump is basically older. He's also a grandfather. Age is off the table. Who would have thought that, really? Here's the other thing. I don't think Trump being a grandfather is going to help him as much as Hillary being a grandmother is going to help
her. So why is that? Seems like a double standard, huh?
Well, it's always been a double standard. It's always in that sense that whenever a woman in a position of authority is a grandmother, she's always described as a grandmother. And a man is almost never described as a grandfather. But here's something else I found, that people will accept a woman in a position of authority if she's older than they will if she's younger. So age really is a benefit to Hillary in many, many ways, as is being a grandmother. I wouldn't be surprised if we hear more and more and more about Charlotte and the new grandchild when it comes along.
Back to the phones to Newport News, Virginia. Robin's on the line. Hi, Robin. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to the program with Leslie Stahl.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I just had a comment that since becoming a grandmother, I kind of feel like an abnormal grandmother because I also have to be a kindergarten teacher, and I'm surrounded by five-year-olds all day. And we have really high expectations for them, and I think that I have the same for my grandchildren, where their parents think, oh, he's five, he this and that. I know what they're capable of. And I feel like a little abnormal because I guess I'm more of a disciplinarian than maybe even I was with my own children.
Robin, thank you. Leslie Stahl, there's someone who's actually cracking the whip a little bit.
Well, you know, this is interesting. It isn't that I didn't meet some grandmothers who are disciplinarians. I have a whole chapter that I call Granny Nannies. And these are grandmothers who are stepping in because both of the parents are working. And the grandmother is the nanny. She comes three, four, five days a week and takes care of the kids. And those grandmothers are the strict ones because they're the ones who are trying to get the kids in shape for life. And it is the parents who are the permissive ones. So it is a little role reversal when the grandmother is in there more often. But normally, to play off the abnormal,
right.
Normally grandparents just give them whatever they want. Their mother says no candy, they're giving them candy. And
for
you
breakfast.
Brought up Michelle for breakfast. And you brought up Michelle Obama. She has said she looks at her mother, who was really strict with her and her brother, and says, "Who are you?" You know, this woman who's just anything these girls want.
Zoe is calling from Columbia, South Carolina. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. I'm calling, and regrettably so, to take exception, similar to the last caller, to the statement and the theory that it's universal that all grandparents don't have this concern for discipline and don't worry about how the grandchildren are going to succeed in the world. My experience is I'm 50 years old. I have two 12-year-olds. I have been practicing law for 25 years. I am a former president of the National Association of Women Lawyers. I am not talking about those parents or families that are at the lower socioeconomic level where the grandparents have to step in. I am not talking about the grandparents, which Ms. Stahl just referenced, that have to take care of their grandchildren because those parents are working.
Mm-hmm.
I am in the thick of what she is talking about. And the reason I call is because that is not my experience on a national basis with women in the upper 1% of this country.
I'll take that to Leslie Stahl. How do you respond, Leslie?
Well, no, I don't want to say everything I'm saying is universal. But I do think most grandparents are indulgent. I think it comes over us. And there's always exceptions, always. And I don't ever say in the book it's all grandparents because that's ridiculous, right? But I do find that there is kind of an imperative to just simply shine your face on these children. They shine their face back at you, and you melt.
One more
Most
call.
Of us.
Kate in Boston, Massachusetts. Hi, Kate. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I'm thrilled about the subject. I'm thrilled about being a grandma. And my only problem is I'm an outlier. I love children. I'm a teacher, a nanny, a mama. My beautiful grandchildren are out of state, and they're thriving. It's hard. I don't know how to be an out-of-state grandma. It's like an artist, you take the paints away, or a librarian with no books.
Oh, that's
really
beautiful.
Compare. How do you do it? How do you work through This is a new role, and I love it, but can we do it?
Thank you. About a minute left, Leslie.
Well, I find that a lot of grandparents, when they retire, because of the feelings you have, pick up, sell everything, maybe their house that they've lived in for 50 years, and they are moving to be near their grandchildren. It is a huge trend in the country. And you're seeing it with people when both the husband and wife retire. And this may be what you're going to do one day.
Leslie, you end the book. First you say, being a grandmother tends to soften the indignities of aging. And then you end the book by issuing a call to arms to all grandparents. Share that with us as we end here.
Well, what I say is that grandparents, if you're involved, get more involved. If you are not involved at all because your children won't let you see your grandchildren, try to make up with them. Grovel. Do anything. Do everything to try and get those grandchildren in your lives. And for the parents, if you're keeping your grandparent, your own parents at arm's length, get over it. Get over it. Let them in. It's only for the children. It's good for the children.
Leslie Stahl, CBS News 60 Minutes correspondent. Her new book is Becoming Grandma, The Joys and Science of the New Grandparenting. Just in time for Mother's Day, Leslie Stahl, thank you so much for being with us today. You can continue the conversation, listeners, and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.